The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice fills the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson.
It's a wave on a dusty road. Good morning, Jefferson. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And here in Redding, we can actually see the mountains all around us. You're not straining to look through the smoke. And you're not, your sinuses aren't burning. You can actually see the mountains. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Thank you, God, for allowing us to be able to see that. How are you doing, Terry?
I'm doing good, except I had to trim my mustache today.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just heard that song. And yesterday I did have foam.
dripping from your mustache.
Because it was Sally and I were out doing yard work. And, yeah, and so I realized.
Wait, okay. You had foam from doing yard work?
Yeah, well, actually, from an adult beverage after yard work.
Sally was doing yard work and you were drinking beer.
Well, no, we both were doing yard work and we both had a beer.
Okay.
Well, she started the yard work. She gave me this pleading look that she wanted me to dig a hole for her.
Uh-huh.
And she stands there with a shovel, you know, and she, you know, she scrapes just the top of the dirt, you know.
Yeah.
And,
it's like, come on, buzzer.
Is that a hint? And I guess it was because I ended up digging the hole like I have done.
Okay, good
I wonder
point.
How many holes I've dug. Maybe Sally can post something on that, how many holes I've dug in that yard. Anyway, I digress. How are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well. We're here and happy to be here, spreading the good news of Jefferson and all things affiliated with it. And so we're back at it. We haven't been together on Sunday for a while.
No, we haven't. And we've got
lots of things going on.
Lots of things. And we have a great show today because we have Gary Zuerman on. He's on hold right now. He's one of our attorneys. And we're going to ask him some questions to sort of clear things up because a lot of us, even though things are so transparent, we get all this information from a staffing law firm and from Gary and all this stuff. And our case is very transparent. A lot of times it's just hard to assimilate all that and to speak legalese.
Right.
You know? And so, anyway, we're going to have Gary on in just a couple of minutes, but I do have a couple of quick announcements.
Okay, and I'll have one after you're done.
Great, okay. First of all, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at 2570 Bonneview Road at the church that shall remain nameless, but
nameless,
it is the only church there.
Yep.
And Ashley can attest to it that it needs to be remain nameless. our producer. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Ashley.
Good morning.
And so, anyway, we are going to have a short video, a couple of videos by our good friend, Chris Ann Hall. And Chris Ann is going to be talking about the executive office, the powers thereof, the judiciary, which is going to certainly fit into our program today, and the supremacy clause, which is very, very important to understand. And then at 5:30, we will have an update with our Jefferson group, again at 2570 Bonneview Road. And also, I want to kind of encourage people here in Shasta County to go out to Anderson High School today. And I'd get out there about 3 o'clock. There's a debate between Doug LaMalfa and Audrey Denny, who is a Democrat from Nevada County. And I'm going to be interested to hear that debate. And I think it should be pretty good. There's been things I've heard that people will be bussed in from Nevada County and they're going to try to disrupt the meeting. And, you know, that's going to depend on the group that's putting this on. And who is that exactly? Isn't that the...
All I see is it's posted. It's going to be at the Anderson High School at 1471 Ferry Street in Anderson. And that's all I see. I don't see who's actually...
League of Women's Voters.
Was that it?
League of Women's Voters.
Okay.
I hope that those folks...
The post I have doesn't have that. So that's all right. That's good.
That's who it is.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that those folks can kind of keep a handle on this so that people can get asked their questions. And we don't need chatting from the audience and that sort of stuff. So
no.
Hopefully they keep that in. And Tom Cinco, our sheriff, if you're listening, it'd be great to see you there. You know what I mean? Anyway, all right. Along with that, what you got there, buddy?
Well, Frank Rose handed this to me before I came in. Kathy and Millie that have Classic Cafe. They are they're having a breakfast, and it's a fundraiser. And it's, it's at the Vets Hall from 7:30 today until 11 a.m. So 7:30 to 11 a.m. today. And this is a fundraiser for their long storage costs because they have everything in storage until they get their facility back up and running. So they're just trying to keep funds coming in so that they can pay for storage
Absolutely.
And whatnot. So please come help donate. And, again, that's at the Veterans Hall here in downtown Reading, 7:30 to 11 a.m. And it's a fundraising breakfast, so you can come and pay for breakfast. You can also throw extra money at them. So it's a good way to support these beautiful ladies. It's a classic cafe.
And also on Friday, this coming Friday, September the 21st, we would want to encourage people to come to the Secretary of State's office in Sacramento. We will be turning in the declarations for Mariposa County and also for Stanislaus County. So we're really excited about that. I know those folks there are. And I just want to say hi to Ray and Karen and to Marie, known also as Little Bear, and just hoping that folks can come in and enjoy that time with them where they strike a blow for liberty.
There you go.
Mark Baird will be taking the paperwork into the Secretary of State's office to get it registered there and put into the record there, and also it'll go to the parliamentary record via the Senate pro tem, the Assembly pro tem. So, along with that, do you have anything else there, buddy?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, because I'd sure like to get to Gary. Now, we have Gary Zerman, who is on the line. Gary is one of our attorneys and just a fantastic, fantastic guy. Someone who really is able to articulate and explain the rather complicated legal situations that we have in this country and what they become. But he's so great at it. We wanted to bring him on. We have some questions for him. Gary, are you there, my friend?
Yeah, good morning, Terry and Wynn. How you doing?
Good, Gary.
Thanks for being here, Gary.
You're welcome.
Anyway, Gary is one of our attorneys, and again, we're very thankful and blessed to have him. And I'm going to kind of get right into this, into these questions, because I want to make sure that, you know, and folks, if you want to call in, you have a question for Gary about any of these questions, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. Gary. So we now have a petition for a writ of mandamus in front of the Supreme Court. Can you kind of give us in a short synopsis of how we got here?
Well, yeah, as you said earlier, that the legal process is so complicated. You're correct there, and so is government. And that's contrary to the founding principles of this country. We were supposed to have a limited government, but it's anything but limited. It's cancerous behemoth and just keeps metastasizing. And so many of these issues simply aren't that complicated. Life isn't that complicated. But when the law and the government gets involved, it seems to turn everything upside down. For example, we filed our complaint, Citizens for Fair Representation versus Secretary of Padilla, on May 8th, 2017, and it's now over a year, and we haven't got a three-judge court yet and been able to get to the trial court and put on our case. Similarly, we've intervened in a case in the D.C. Federal court, Laverne versus U.S. House of Representatives. He filed his case on 4/28/17, you know, before ours, and his case simply hasn't gotten there either. He's got a three-judge court, but they haven't been able to get to the dance and put on their case. In fact, they have dismissed Mr. Laverne as a plaintiff from the case. He's appealing that. But these issues that both cases present, the lack of representation, are critical to our country. That's why we're having so many problems that both the federal government and here in California, our case, they have cut off the pulse, the lifeblood of the people, which is the legislature. We're not, the population is growing in leaps and bounds, but we're not getting any more representatives, which means that we're getting less and less and less representation. And so our writ, we brought a writ because when we filed our complaint, we asked for a three-judge court, and that's a pretty simple task. Congress has a statute that said any case involving apportionment of the federal legislature, the state legislature, should get a three-judge court because those issues are so important. And there's a 2015 U.S. Supreme Court case that was unanimous, Shapiro versus McManus, authored by Justice Scalia, that said that this is really simple. You'll look at it, and unless the case is wholly frivolous, the one judge that the case is filed in should go ahead and appoint a three-judge court. Well, our judge, Judge Mueller, initially, when we filed that request, granted our request. She said that our case implicated the statute, and she sent it over to the chief judge for him to appoint two other judges. Now, Shapiro said that the tasks of these judges, one, the trial court judge, is very limited, their jurisdiction, just to look at that. And if the case is, involves apportionment and is not frivolous, you meet this low bar, this low threshold, and should then the statute's implicated, that judge, limited jurisdiction, then refers it over to the chief judge, and that chief judge has limited jurisdiction, and his only task is to appoint the other two judges. Well, what happened is when we filed that request, the Secretary of State, being represented by the Attorney General, filed an application for reconsideration. And their application was improper because you have to come up with new facts or new law. Otherwise, every decision that the court would make, somebody says, well, we want it reconsidered. And so they listed no facts, no laws, and the judge then set that up for hearing. And then she took the hearing off calendar. Well, we then ended up amending our complaint, and with the amended complaint, we filed another request for a three-judge court. That wasn't acted upon, largely ignored, so we then filed a motion. And when we filed the motion, the matter was calendared for hearing, an oral argument. The Secretary of State filed opposition, and before we even got to file our reply papers, the judge said the oral hearing is taken off calendar and it'll be decided by the papers. So we had a hearing in September here recently, and we brought that up and we made a really good transcript, and we asked the judge, you know, what happened? You didn't rule on our motion, a request for a three-judge court, and we got her to discuss that with us, and she said that she had heard from the chief judge. He gave her a response and essentially told her to reconsider her initial grant of the three-judge court, and then she pulled it back. And then she also had discussed it with staff attorneys. Well, again, she had limited jurisdiction. She can't discuss this with anybody. She made the choice. It's a valid choice she made, and we should have a three-judge court, but we didn't. And so she affirmed that decision not to give us a three-judge court, but we got her on the record to say our case was not frivolous. The Attorney General representing the Secretary of State also said our case was not frivolous. So we met that threshold bar. So we then filed a writ to the U.S. Supreme Court because we could have direct avenue to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we filed that, essentially it got docketed on July 10th of this year, and we're awaiting a hearing. On August 8th, the Secretary of State, when we filed it, the court said that responses were due by
the 27th, August,
The 27th.
Yeah.
And then the Secretary of State filed a letter to the court saying we have no intent to file a response unless directed by the court. And then we thought that possibly the trial judge, Judge Mueller, and the three judge and the chief judge, Sidney Thomas, would file a response. And so far they haven't either. And then on 8/22/18, the court distributed the writ to the clerks for the Supreme Court justices and the justices, and they are going to have a conference on 9/24/18 to discuss whether they will take up our writ.
Now, when you talk about they're having a conference and you talk about they, are you talking about the actual justices of the Supreme Court Or, okay, and exactly how does that procedure work?
Well, they've gotten the materials earlier, and the clerks probably will look at that for the judges and prepare a memo on it, and they will read that, and the court will get together, and it's confidential, these conferences they have, and they will discuss whether they will take up the writ. And I believe we need four votes for them to take it up. And what we're asking for is a writ of mandamus, is a writ where it goes to the court and the court, higher court, issues an order to a lower court or to other lower government officials and directing them to do something like follow the law or refrain from doing something. So what we're asking is the court take up our writ of mandamus and find that it is well pled and that we are correct, and to order Judge Mueller to again convene a three-judge court, because the statute is implicated by our case, and that she then sends it over to the chief judge, and that he does his duty to appoint the other two judges, giving us the three-judge court, and then we can start presenting our case.
Well, Gary, okay, she already did that once, so
right.
is that going to help our case?
Well, it should. It's in our writ. We lay it out pretty well, saying that, she did that. We'd like some explanation. It appears that there has been some back-channel discussions here that are totally improper. Again, Shapiro versus McManus, that's a unanimous 2015 court opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court, again, unanimous, and what they were doing was limiting the jurisdiction of these judges and saying that this is a perfunctory task that you have to do, and unless our case is frivolous, and if it does implicate apportionment, which it does, we've got an admission from Judge Mueller that our case is not frivolous, then, and we've got her acting before saying that our case implicates the statute, and sending it over to the chief judge, and then something happened there.
We're
not accusing them of misconduct, but when we point out in our papers, when a higher judge tells a lower judge, makes suggestions or tells him what to do, most of these lower judges are not going to rock the boat. They will go along with what happened there.
So
hopefully the court will grant this for two reasons. One, we think we deserve it on the merits, and then two, possibly look into what went on in the back channels there.
Okay, now with that, they're going to be well-versed on whether or not somebody's retracted a three-judge court request, right? I mean, you put that in there, and it's going to raise that question. So, again, it's all part of the whole fractured process that we have here as far as what she's done to us.
Well, yeah, it's not only her, but in so many ways. When you go to court, it's supposed to be about the integrity of the process. It's supposed to be about truth and justice. But maybe the inexperienced and the novice believe that that works straightforward like that. But, in fact, instead of about truth and justice, a lot of times it's about power and money. And it's always about accountability. It's always about integrity. And we've seen, you know, many instances, in fact, where our government doesn't act with integrity and isn't held accountable. In fact, the founding fathers thought that power was almost always abused, and they tried to set up a system of separation of powers and checks and balances. But get to our case, and the principle is the lack of representation. And the legislature is placed first in the Constitution for a reason. It's first among equals, and it's the most direct to the people. It's the pulse and the lifeblood of the people. But when we have these continued expansions of our population growing, 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 and we don't, in our nation's history initially, when they did the census and they would, every 10 years, add more representatives to keep our government organic of the people. But you get beyond a certain point, and these ratios get so large, the legislative districts get so big, that it gets to the point that bigger is not only not better, bigger doesn't work anymore. the political process has been taken over by the two major parties, and in fact, it's become an oligarch.
Well, a couple of things. We're going to go to a break here in a minute, but I want to lead into the next segment sort of leave you with this question, but I do want to clarify a couple of things. Thank you so much for clarifying that it is the Supreme Court justices, themselves, that will be discussing during this conference whether or not they're going to issue the writ. That's very helpful because we've had some people out there that thought I was just going to be staff, but that really helped a lot. The other thing is that the judge, in fact, as you said, when she had mentioned about the case, she said it was a very serious question. And Mr. Waters, the attorney for the state, also said that it was a very serious question. So anyway, Gary, when we come back, I'd like you to sort of elaborate a little bit on what happens with the change in magistrate. There's also been some things that people don't quite understand about that. How or does that affect us? So when we get back from the break, my good friend, let's chit-chat about that.
Okay.
And time has come
for 51.
When I turned 18, I couldn't wait to vote. After all, voting is a privilege for all Americans, right? Then I did the math. Did you know that the northern third of California only has 3 out of 80 seats in the Assembly and 3 out of 40 seats in the Senate? Northern California has no representation, and my vote doesn't count. Splitting from California and forming the state of Jefferson is the only remedy. Please visit SOJ51.net for more information. Please donate now to help restore representation.
I'm Don Burton. I'm here with Bruce Blake, owner of Powerhouse Solar.
And Sue Blake.
We're at the beautiful Cottonwood Community Library, where you just finished up a job. They have solar now. What's it mean to them?
Well, Don, this compact 6-kilowatt system will offset the Cottonwood Community Library's entire electric bill. This is due to the efficient design and the quality of the SunPower panels, which are rated as the best solar panels on the market.
And the all-black panels present a beautifully clean look on their roof.
The SunPower panels can also be installed as a ground rack or a pole mount system.
How do you know which type of system is best for you?
Visit our showroom and design center today at 4616 Caterpillar Road in Reading,
where one of our solar design experts will sit down with you and present all of the available options and design a system specific to your energy needs.
And Powerhouse Solar can save you money on your home as well. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600.
And let us get the power of the sun working for your home or business.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Well, I heard some people talking just the other day, and they said you were gonna put me on a shelf. But let me tell you, I got some news for you, and you'll soon find out it's true, and then you'll have to eat your lunch all by yourself.
All by yourself. Gone.
She was laughing at me because I was playing bass over here.
On his air guitar.
On my air guitar. You bet. Whenever I play on my air guitar, I'm always in tune.
In tune, yes.
Always there, man. Always. I know what keys to hit. I got it down.
You got it dialed, huh?
I do.
All right, good. Okay, so we're back at it.
So, Gary, we have Gary Zerman here, who's one of our attorneys and a great patriot. Gary, I appreciate the emails that we get from you. Those are great. Oh, man, you're just amazing stuff. Very blessed to have you and Scott and everybody else on the team. Anyway, there has been some confusion on people not really quite getting the fact that there's a change. I believe that there's a change with the chief magistrate of the Ninth Circuit. Is that correct?
Well, it's not the chief. It's
just
one of the magistrates.
One of the magistrates. Okay, good, good.
And the chief judge of the Eastern District Fresno branch, the chief judge of the Eastern District, Chief Judge Lawrence O'Neill, changed the magistrate. And I believe that's because it says, due to the appointment of Magistrate Judge Dennis M. Cota to the bench of the Eastern District of California, this action is reassigned from Magistrate Judge Craig M. Nelson to Magistrate Dennis M. Cota for all other proceedings. It's my understanding that Magistrate Kellison retired, and so that's why Magistrate Cota was appointed. First of all, the magistrate has had nothing to do with our case, and I don't think will have anything to do with our case. Again, hopefully U.S. Supreme Court will take up our writ, and then maybe they will file responses or something. But if they take it up, there'll probably be some kind of further briefing on it, and we hope that they grant it. Right now, there's only there's eight justices on the Supreme Court pending the vote on Judge Kavanaugh. And again, it only takes four to take up the writ. Then once they take it up, there'll either be further papers filed to argue it. I doubt if they'll have any hearing on it. And there's several things that they can do. Number one, which we're hoping for, that they will grant it, directing Judge Mueller to implicate the statute and do her duty to send it over to the chief judge, and then they'll order the chief judge to do his duty to appoint the other two judges, giving us the three-judge court. That's option one. Option two is that they can take it up and decide it, but instead of them ordering the judges to do that they then send it over to the Ninth Circuit, to the chief judge, and a panel of judges there will determine it. Again, we have pointed out that there were some back channel dealings that went on here, so we would hope that that doesn't happen, because we're going to the same people that had possibly improper ex-party communications that they shouldn't have had. And the third thing that they can do is just deny our writ, and then we go back down to Judge Mueller and see what she'll do on our case.
You know, it's an interesting thing that during the last hearing we were in September, she did mention twice during that time that she wished she had two other judges to help her.
Yeah.
It's just it's all very peculiar. With the petition we have for the writ, I'm just kind of scratching my head thinking it's pretty much a no-brainer. But again, you know, as it's been said before, all courts are corrupt. We hope that the highest court in the land isn't. But
well, the purpose of our courts and the law is to provide a large measure of certainty to people. And as we look around daily, you see less and less certainty, and things are becoming a circus, just like this recent confirmation hearing of Justice Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. I think the first day or two, 77 people were arrested for disrupting the hearing, and then now that the hearings have concluded, Senator Feinstein has sent over a letter to the FBI, and the FBI said they're not going to look into it. And that letter was from somebody that apparently went to high school with Judge Kavanaugh back when, you know, he was a teenager. And we don't know what's in there. And that letter supposedly went to some congresswoman, and she then gave it to Dianne Feinstein and well before the hearing began, and yet she sat on it.
Mm-hmm.
And after the hearings concluded, she does this blindside attack on him that violates every tenet of due process. If there was something that's material and relevant in that letter, it should have been aired and it should have been examined. But it makes you wonder why they withheld it and it didn't come in the hearing. And one would conclude there's nothing really there, and this was just a character assassination.
Oh, man, it was high school. But anyway, if you could, we'd like you also to clarify, what is the function and the duty of the magistrate? What exactly is their function and duty?
Well, they assist the judges, and there's an argument that it's unconstitutional. They're selected by the other judges, and that would violate the doctrine of separation of powers, because Article 3 of federal judges are supposed to be appointed by the president and be confirmed by the Senate. And this process of magistrates avoids that whole process. And we have something similar in California. We have commissioner judges, and they're equally selected by the judges and not appointed by the governor, and they really don't have a confirmation hearing. And so that makes you question the whole process. And see, that gets back to the lack of representation, and that the legislature is supposed to be first among equals, and it's the pulse and the lifeblood of the people. And like in California, the last time we added a legislator in our state was 1862, and we were about 800,000 people. We've added 39.5 million people, but no representatives. Now, at the same time, the executive branch and the judiciary have grown in leaps and bounds, and in fact, both those branches have leapfrogged over the legislature, and now the legislature is at the end. And so the voice of the people doesn't get heard. They don't even know what the will of the people is, and if they know what it is, they ignore it. So our whole structure has been inverted and turned upside down.
Hmm. Now, you were talking before about Eugene.
And let me add one other thing.
Sure.
Is we had filed in our CFR case versus Padilla on August 2nd, 2018, we asked the court to take judicial notice of a letter that the judges from the federal judges from the Eastern District filed. And it's kind of ironic because they're making several of the same arguments that we're making in their letter. They talk about how big the Eastern District is, how many people are there, and that they don't have enough resources to serve the public. They can't handle their cases. They're overworked because of lack of resources. And it's ironic that they're appealing to the U.S. Senate and U.S. House to give them more resources and more judges.
Yeah, and also Judge Mueller was one of the people who signed that.
She signed it.
She did. Mm-hmm. And also
every judge, I think, in that district signed it.
Yes, they did. And so, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that the Eastern District that the Ninth Circuit has more people in it than 40 of our states combined. So it really
is
way
too
big.
Yeah, that's been a problem for years, that the Ninth Circuit, mm-hmm. I believe it contains 11 states.
Yes.
In the Southwest, and it's just so large, and so people aren't getting the representation from their legislatures, and they're not getting their due in court either, because it's just so large.
Yeah, the one other thing that that kind of came up, we had talked about you talked about Eugene LaVergne's case versus the House of Representatives to increase representation by talking about Articles the First, which we've found out now is something that actually was passed. But without going into all that, we'll maybe save that for another program, but without going into all that, we did intervene, the CFR did intervene. What's going on with our position of intervention in that case, and are we really now truly part of that case, or what's going on with that, or can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I will. Let me just back up.
Sure.
It wasn't passed. It was ratified.
Ratified.
In
right.
fact, there were, after the Articles of Confederation, which were deemed to be too weak for the federal government, we then drafted the Constitution, and that was sent to the states. And initially, it wasn't ratified because the people feared that the federal government was now too strong. And so in order to get passed, they had the Federalist Papers debating back and forth proposed amendments. At one time, there was suggested that they would have 19. In fact, though, they put forth 12, and they called them articles, Article the First through Article 12. And what happened is the present first ten amendments, the Bill of Rights, were actually Articles 3 through 12. Article 1 had to do, which was the first, really the first amendment, had to do with representation. The Constitution states that there'll be one rep for every 30,000 people, and then Article the First said that once we reach 100 reps, it'll be one rep for every 40,000. Then it went on and said once we reach 200 reps, it will be one for every 50,000 people. And that's very critical because that would have kept these ratios in our constitutional system where the districts remained small and they were organic of the people and people could participate in the process. Again, though, we've capped the legislature in California in 1862 was the last time we increased it, and then it was put into the 1879 Constitution that we'd stay at 40 state senators and 80 assembly members. Again, though, that's cutting off the pulse, the lifeblood, and the power of the people. And then in what happened there is that initially we increased the representation, and then in 1910, they cut it off at 435 and then put it into a statute in 1929 at 435. And in 1910, we had less than 100 million people in this country. Now we're at 320. Mm-hmm. So we have added 225 million people, but mm-hmm. no more representatives. And so the power of the people has been limited, cut off, while the executive branch has grown in leaps and bounds and the judiciary has grown in leaps and bounds. In fact, we have twice as many judges as we have representatives. Well, and so as to Laverne's case, mm-hmm. there's been some things that have happened. One, they've dismissed Mr. Laverne, saying that the case that he, a similar case that he brought, his case should be dismissed, his claims dismissed on res judicata. They meaning
the three-judge court, is that correct?
Yes. Okay. He did get a three-judge mm-hmm. court immediately okay. in his case, something, mm-hmm. again, that we didn't get. Mm-hmm. And shockingly, like in his case, the docket is like 24 pages. There's over 130 entries, and he hasn't been able to, again, get to the dance and put on his case. Mm. And what he's saying is that Article the First was, in fact, ratified, and yet Connecticut didn't send notification to the Secretary of State of the country, and it just got lost along the way. And his argument is that if it was, in fact, ratified, we have a duty mm-hmm. to implement it, and the government can't go forward without doing that, and a lot of its acts are illegitimate then.
Well, now, if in fact let's say that I'll delve into the future a little bit here, and let's say that Eugene does win this case, would that make anything that had been done by the Congress null and void back to the time of when they should have been enacted as far as being compliant with Articles the First? In other words, as far as the population and the ratio that it should be for each representative?
Well, yes and no. In theory, you know, we should go all the way back to when they put the limits mm-hmm. on the number of representatives.
You said that was around 1910? Was that
even before that, okay. because the ratios may have been wrong. Mm-hmm. But see, one thing is so important. We have to keep those ratios. If we don't, the whole system of our government becomes distorted, mm-hmm. and the political parties get too much power, too much money gets into our politics, and we leave the whole purpose of our Constitution, which is we the people, and it becomes we the government or we the political parties, and the whole system becomes inverted. It's kind of like, in theory, that's what should happen. We should go back and correct everything. But once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's hard to put it back in. And so what Mr. Laverne's asking for is that it be implemented henceforward, and that there should be over 6,000 representatives in the House of Representatives. And so mostly it will be prospective going forward rather than going backward.
So how would they initiate something like that? And how, and I mean, I know we're just, you know, looking at it from the bench, but how would that be initiated, and how long would it take?
Well, go back to the founding of the country. They were able to do it, design a system. You know, they looked in over history and other countries and other forms of government, and they devised something, and they sat down and figured out what they were going to do, wrote the rules, and did it. And so they would have to, Congress would have to get together and rule, you know, the court would direct them that, well, we're going to have this system now that follows the Article the First of the Constitution that was in fact ratified, and set up the proper size districts and then divide them among the states.
Now, with that going on, though, we have some people in Congress that can't even walk and chew gum. So how are they going to be able to make a decision on something of this magnitude? How are they going to do it short of holding it up like they tried to do everything else on both sides? I'm not saying one side or the other, but both sides do that. So how are we going to make this make it work?
Well, one, the court has to stand up and do its duty and issue the orders. Then, you know, the media's got to do its job and report it, and then the people have to do their job and, you know, reign herd over their representatives.
Hold them accountable.
There you go.
We're going to have to go off to our last break here real quick, but before we do, what I'd like you to think about, my friend, is the position that the CFR, Citizens for Fair Representation, have in the Laverne case, and like to know if we have a role there, if we still have a role there, and what our role is in that case. So with that, time has come.
For 51.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Did you know that Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution lays out the framework for the state of Jefferson's plan to split California? A state can be formed from the land within another state if the state legislature and Congress approve it with a simple majority vote. 51% is all it takes. Your vote doesn't count in Northern California. California is broken, and the time has come for 51. Please visit SOJ51.net and donate now to show your support.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomforts. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Sally, did you do that one, honey? Was that sent from Sally?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's sent from somebody.
Somebody.
Probably sent from Mark Kent.
Yeah, there you go.
Could be. Anyway, yes, Gary, we digress. How are you, my friend? Anyway,
we do that a lot.
Yeah, we do. The question is that what role does the Citizens for Fair Representation play, and what, or do we have a role in Eugene Levern's case, and what is the current position we have with that?
Okay. Well, yeah, both cases have to do with the lack of representation that our governments were premised on the fact that as the population grows, we will increase the number of representatives. In fact, one of the first founding principles was no taxation without representation. That's what led to the Declaration of Independence and the American Revolution. That's how important representation was. The King of England, we had no representatives over in Parliament, and when the colonists tried to get representatives here, they were shut down, and the king just was ignoring them and their rights. And so that led to the revolution and the founding of this country. So it's so instrumental to this country. And one of the issues in the Civil War was representation. And it's so fundamental to this country. And then again, with the founding of the Constitution, Article the First had to do with representation. That's how important it was. There were 12 amendments or articles put forward, and first among them was Article the First that had, with increasing the representatives as the population increased, and Mr. Levern's case, he went back and looked in the archives of the various states and found that Connecticut had ratified it. They just didn't give notice to the Federal Secretary of State. So they had sufficient votes to ratify, and as a matter of law, it was ratified. It now only needs to be implemented. So both cases have to do with that same issue, the organic issue of representation. So we had Mr. Staffney representing the CFR and some other plaintiffs on December 7th, 17, filed a motion to intervene.
Right.
And then just recently here on September 15th, 18, that's like a number of months later, they have denied his motion without prejudice. There's other motions that they want to hear in that case, and they said economize judicial resources. They're delaying determining CFR's motion to intervene in the Levern case due to these other motions being heard. Some of them may deal with the entire case of Levern, and if they ruled against all of the plaintiffs there, our motion to intervene would be moot. And they're saying, should it not be dismissed, then later it would be right to bring this up. We feel we're kind of prejudiced by this. It should be heard, and that we have a lot to add to the Levern case, and we should be there.
Well, Gary, a quick question on that. When you say denied without prejudice, what exactly does that mean?
Okay, if they deny with prejudice, that means it's a final ruling and it's over. Denied without prejudice means that it can be brought up at another time.
Okay.
So one is it's final, and the other is that it's still open.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure that we had that clarity out there, because it does, you know, just the words themselves, it can be, it's not very clear. Yeah, it's confusing, and especially for all of us who are not legalese, you know, it's like not, just learning this stuff and trying to understand it and wrap our head around it so that we can play the game too.
And also,
well, when you go to law school, boy, it's course after course of confusion.
Yeah, and when you were saying they, you're talking about the three-judge court. Is that correct? You're not talking about the Supreme Court of the United States. You're talking about the Supreme.
Right. It's still at the trial level.
It's still at the trial level. Okay,
Mr.
good.
In Levern's case, there's a three-judge court that was assigned immediately.
Yes.
There they followed the proper procedure of the statute.
Yes.
And it was filed with a single judge court. That judge then said that his case and the other plaintiffs implicated the statute 2284, and then so sent it over to the chief judge to appoint two other judges, and they were immediately appointed.
Well, now, too, our case, we got our three-judge court panel awarded to us back in August of 17, and then it was within a day or so, it was retracted. So how does
well,
that...
it wasn't within a day or so. What happened is initially it was opposed quite quickly, and the judge had set it for hearing, if you'll recall, and then she took the hearing off calendar, and that was essentially denying it.
Okay.
And then when we amended our complaint, we filed another request, and she didn't deal with that, so we filed a motion, and then that was set for hearing. And after the opposition was filed, we were preparing our reply papers, and then she took the oral argument off hearing, and we didn't get a ruling. And so when we had another matter that was on calendar, Padilla's motion to dismiss, where we had the hearing, we brought that up in the hearing. And again, one thing that we brought up to her is we had researched all of these cases and never found a case where a judge had granted the three-judge panel and it was pulled back.
Wow.
And we also, you know, brought up to the court that nothing in the statute says she has the authority to do that.
You mean in the entire country there's never been anyone do that?
Yeah, we researched a lot of cases. We didn't maybe get every one, but, I mean, we spent several hours and a couple days looking at all the cases, and we never found one that was granted and then pulled back.
That is amazing.
And we brought that up to the judge.
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
I remember
you did
that.
Very well,
that was
very
wonderful.
Nicely. Yeah, that was good. And her hackles got up a little bit, but then she caught herself. You could tell that she was...
Well, and you know, that's why so many people are troubled by the law.
Right.
Again, the purpose of the law is to provide a large measure of certainty to people so we know how to gauge our conduct, what's legal, what's illegal, what's the proper procedure, what's improper. And you have these things happen all the time. And one of the problems is that judges have absolute judicial immunity. In fact, most of government has immunity. Now, you have to ask yourself, how is it that government is supposed to be our servant and we, the people, are supposed to be sovereign and the masters? How is it that our servants have immunity? That inverts the whole system.
Oh,
yeah.
Amen.
Mary, you know, I know you're on there, but you have about 1 minute. We only have 2 minutes left. Could you...
What's your question?
What's your question?
Yes. Gary mentioned the fact about with prejudice. Does that mean that you have to refile, or does that mean with prejudice and it has a questionnaire or something that follows? I mean, where does that leave you?
Well, go ahead,
Gary. What will happen is some of these motions will have to be heard, and that at some point you just renew the motion or tell the court we would like to have it heard again. And you can just essentially file a notice and have the papers attached and saying, you know, we want a ruling on this.
In other words, if it has prejudice, that means that it cannot be appealed. If it does not have prejudice, like they did, we can appeal it, yes?
Well, with prejudice means final. Sometimes
final,
you can
right.
appeal it, or sometimes it's an interlocutory matter, has
okay.
to wait, go forward or wait. But right now, it just means that it's not final and that some other proceedings have to go forward. And, you know, one thing, the law is a big bag of tricks. And in my practice, one thing that I find, and, you know, many others, is that there's just too many tricks played and delay, 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 delay. And life just isn't this complicated. And both the law and our government has really messed up things. I mean, one thing I tell people all the time is, like, look at our government. What are these people that are supposed to represent us doing? We're running, they admit to about $21 trillion deficit, and with unfunded liabilities, maybe it's $144 trillion.
Hey, Gary, with that, thank you very much, but we are literally out of time.
Okay.
We definitely want to have you back.
Oh, man, yeah.
You've got some
great
information, and people will be asking more questions. So you willing to come back sometime?
Sure, anytime.
All right, hey, Gary, well, thank you so much. We truly appreciate it.